Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Grave Pursuit by L.E.K. Tensions increase as the body count builds. Emily Davis stumbles across a skull while searching for a missing hiker in Hickory Run State Park, and someone goes to great lengths to keep her away from the case. Boulderfield's national landmark status and its popularity makes it impossible to keep the story out of the national press, and a viral video puts Emily in the crosshairs of a serial killer. The sergeant assigned to investigate the case is none other than her high school sweetheart, Wade Brunner. The butcher of Boulder Field must be stopped. Emily and Wade will need to work together to end his reign of terror.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today, I'm talking with L.E.K., who lives on a hobby farm in central Pennsylvania with her husband, three dogs, and many farm animals. And I'm sure she finds lots of inspirations for her romantic suspense books just by living out there in the middle of nowhere, right? On the farm. All kinds of scary things can happen. So welcome to my show, Elle.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the time on your show.
So hobby farm. So that's a farm that is not like producing food to sell and things like that. Is that, do I have that right?
You do. It's just for fun. We have goats and sheep and chickens, turkeys, ducks, all kinds of animals out there. And it's just to enjoy them.
And so does that figure in any of your books?
Farm yes. Animals? Yeah. It's in a lot of them, I think. Starting with my debut.
Yeah.
Shadowing Stella. There's a couple of farm scenes in there and they're in a lot.
I put my
not cat. All that.
yeah. I put my cats sometimes in my books, especially the ones that have crossed over the Rainbow Bridge. You know, I'm like, oh, I really love this cat. Oh, wait a minute, I can put him in a book.
Haven't done that yet, but maybe I will.
Yeah, just kind of fun stuff. So, okay, you're on a hobby farm, and there must be wonderful places to kind of get away to write. So, where's your favorite kind of go-to place when you want to do some writing?
I sit on my screen porch if it's mm-hmm. spring or summer, and because I can look out over the acres and enjoy the animals. So that's my favorite go-to place to write. In the winter, it's a little harder. I have this office, which is great, but it's harder. Usually I sit on the couch and write in the winter.
Oh. Yeah, I like my office. It's usually quieter and there's no windows, so I'm not as distracted.
I still have the window, but I have it closed.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have a screened in back porch, which I love, but I go out there to read or reflect and not write. So, because I would be too distracted. I need to be focused.
I am easily distracted.
Blinders on. So what is your go-to when you need to pick me up to keep writing? So you have this beautiful setting, but we talk about being distracted or you can't keep writing. How do you, what do you fall back on?
There's a bunch of things that I do to get inspiration, but a lot of times I'll watch a movie, like one of those Hallmark movies and mysteries to get me in the mood to write that type of story. If that doesn't work, I'll chat with some friends or just read in romantic suspense, because that always puts me in the mood to write my own.
Yeah, that's so true. And I find that, you know, it's good to read a wide variety of authors. I even read some that I'm like, okay, they write a little more fast paced than I like to write, but I love to read you always learn something new. I feel every time I read a fiction book, whether it's Christian or non-Christian, I was like, oh, yeah, that was a neat way to say that. Or I didn't think about that.
And they come out with words that you never use. And mm-hmm. you're like, how come I never use that word?
Yeah. Or sometimes they'll have phrases that are kind of unique. And then you realize they use them more than, you know, too often. And so this,
oh yeah.
And then I think, oh, I need to check on my pet face phrases because I know I've got them.
I think we all do.
Yeah.
One that used to really get me was one author always wrote about someone quirking their brow. And I had never heard the expression quirked their brow before I read this book. And it must have been in there 20 times. I'm like,
yeah, okay.
How many times are they going to quirk their brow? Yeah.
Those eyebrows are getting a lot of work out there. One of the phrases that a very well-known author, I'm not going to mention her, but she's a secular writer, but she used to write, hit the gas, like for the car, driving the car. And I hadn't heard that expression before. It's not one that was in my vocabulary, but I felt like that was like way too much. Because it's a unique enough phrase to me that I was like, it felt like they did that like all through the book. And it's in almost all, and now, if I listen to an audio or I read one of her books, I like notice that like jumps out at me all the time.
They do. There's just certain ones that just you can't ignore.
Yeah. And I'm sure any listeners who've read my books, I'm sure I probably have pet phrases. I think
we all do. Them.
So I'm sorry if they bother you. Get past them. Just focus on the story. So where do you set your books? Do you have a particular area of the country that you like to set them in? A town? You mentioned some farm scenes. So I imagine there is a little ruralness to your stories.
Most of them, yeah. Most of my books are set in Pennsylvania, but they're set in rural Pennsylvania, which is where I live. But I grew up near the city, so I can also write city stuff. So I have them too. But most of my books take place here in Pennsylvania, but I do have some Westerns. And I lived out there for a while. So that it helps me to write those. Like I lived in New Mexico and I lived in Arizona. So writing in those areas isn't that difficult for me. I also like my debut novel, Shadowing Stella, that one took place here in Pennsylvania, but it also had scenes in Daytona Beach, Florida. Mm-hmm. Also a place where I lived myself. So since I got around as much as I did when I was younger, I'm able to incorporate a little bit of that in all my stories, but most of my things are rural, small town stories.
Yeah. I live in right outside of Washington, D.C. in Virginia, and I've always lived in Virginia, except for when I went to college, which is a little weird, but I love it. So, but I grew up south of in Southern Virginia, which is totally, totally different from Northern Virginia. And so, yeah, so I like to write about a slower pace sometimes, but then I have some books set around where I live. It's funny because I know some local authors or some local friends and they read my book. Oh, I saw you were at the coffee shop in there. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, oh, they love that, don't they?
Yeah. Yes, I couldn't resist. I did have to put Duclo Coffee Shop in one of my books because it worked and I needed, I needed a coffee shop in this particular location. I said, I'm just going to use the real one, So it's kind of fun. Spot your thing. But I will say that, Google Maps and Google Earth, I mean, hasn't that been like a godsend for writers? Because even when you grow up there, it's like you can, when you need a path, you're like, okay, is there actually a road there or a path? It's just been, even if you're familiar with the area, I find it helpful all the time.
Even the reminders of highway names. Like,
yes.
When I was writing in rural Arizona, there's not a lot of towns. And I needed to have the name of the highway. And I'm like, I don't remember what was out there.
And it could have changed.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I know. I have an aunt and uncle who live in West Virginia and their road used to be Highway 2-3 or something, a number. And now it actually has a road name on it.
The road we live on used to be a rural route, but we
have right. So things change. So Google Maps generally has a good purpose. So you can figure out what's there, what's not there. So how do you ensure, we talked a little bit about using Google Maps to ensure that we're talking about the right towns and the right roads and the right map, the map stuff, but how else do you make sure your books are accurate? What other kind of research do you find that you need to do?
Oh, I do a ton of research. I do a lot of computer research because I actually have phone phobia. Can you believe it? I'm here doing a podcast and I have phone phobia. Yeah. I thought maybe I could do it on the computer and I seem to be doing okay.
You're doing fine.
But so I can't seem to make phone calls, but I can go places and talk to people. So we went and visited one of the Pennsylvania state parks recently because I was setting a book there. Actually, it's my latest, Grave Pursuits. It was set in Hickory Run State Park.
Oh, nice.
So we went there and we were able to talk to some park rangers and visit the area. And we'd been there before. We used to camp there all the time, but it's been a long time and I needed that refresher. So we did that. And that was one way to research. But also I have my books after I do all my research, I have my books go through my editor and she checks things and facts checks them for me. And then it goes out to beta readers. And you'd be surprised how good they are at spotting things that are not right.
We love our beta readers.
Yes, so. They are wonderful.
Yeah.
And they are not afraid to tell me if something isn't right. So once it goes through that, and then the last step is things go out to my ARC readers. And even they find those tiny little things that may not be perfectly accurate. So especially in my historical room, I have 4 historicals.
Mm-hmm.
And those sometimes these the readers have even better understanding of some because they read it all the time, right. So they'll catch something we might miss as writers.
Yeah, and I find that, you know, occasionally my beta readers will mention something that they didn't understand, but I know that it's accurate, and I realize, okay. If they're not from Virginia, sometimes it's a Virginia thing or it's the area of the country I'm in. And so I've realized that I need to drop a little, not like a whole paragraph of info dump, you know, but just a little bit of explanation in there. Like one of my books, Virginia can have some very mild weather. And sometimes things stay green, you know, in December. So one of my Christmas novellas, I had something being green and I kind of had a little bit of an explanation just because I had some readers go, you know, well, how could that be? I mean, isn't there like snow on the ground? Well, no, it hardly snows in December at Christmas time. So yeah, those kind of things. I find that sometimes they may be true, but you have to make sure that your reader is not stumbling on it. So you kind of say why this is true.
Yeah, I've had that myself. Like even my editor, she pointed out, she thought it was wrong when I put German Shepherd dog as the breed, but the breed of dog for German Shepherds actually has the word dog in it. I actually changed it though, because I didn't want to freak everybody out and have them all sending me messages of that. So it just says German Shepherd now, but that's technically incorrect.
So. Yeah. Right. But yeah. And sometimes we do that because we don't want the reader to be sucked out of the book, especially our romantic suspense books, where we're hoping that we're layering on that suspense and that romance and they don't know what's going on next. And we don't want them to be like, why'd she call it a dog? Everyone knows a German Shepherd.
Everyone knows a German Shepherd's a dog. But they use the word dog because of there were German Shepherds as opposed to German Shepherd dogs. So they needed to differentiate the two. But if it's going to pull people out of my story, I don't want to include it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I know I'm with you. We definitely need to be more careful about that. So I think we have time for one more question. And I would just like to know, why do you love writing romantic suspense? What is it about this genre that calls to you as a writer?
It's my favorite genre to read. I've always loved reading romantic suspense. I used to, when I was younger, read all the secular romantic suspense. And it was not clean. And I kept trying to find books that were. Eventually I came across my first Christian romantic suspense and I've been hooked since. As a woman of faith myself, I like reading it and it just seemed natural to write it.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, thank you so much for being on my show, Elle.
Thank you for having me.
So you've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I've been talking with L.E.K. She lives on a hobby farm in central Pennsylvania. She writes a lot of books, including romantic suspense. And you can stay tuned and hear an excerpt from her latest romantic suspense, Grave Pursuits.
Now an excerpt from Grave Pursuit by L.E.K. Emily stood beside Austin and lifted her hand in greeting when a Crown Vic entered the lot. A man exited the vehicle and strode toward them. There was something familiar about his walk. She studied him as he made his way across the macadam. He wasn't wearing a suit jacket, and she couldn't help but notice how his white dress shirt hugged his broad shoulders. He loosened his tie and left his top button undone. His dark hair brushed the top of his collar and curled at the ends, unkempt but attractive. When his startlingly blue eyes met hers, she took a step back and wrapped her arms around her body. 11 years melted away in an instant, and a familiar vice grip took hold on her heart. She didn't break eye contact with the man responsible for her pain.
"Em, I didn't know you were a DCNR ranger."
She'd never expected to see him again. Never. Yet here he was in the flesh, and the grown-up version of Wade Brunner was wreaking havoc on her composure.
"I take it you two know each other?" Austin said. "We were high school sweethearts. Isn't that right, Em?"
Wade locked his gaze with hers again. "Ancient history." She swallowed and broke eye contact as another sedan drove up.
"It's good to see you, although I wish the circumstances were less grim," Wade said.
She glanced over her shoulder. Austin took a step closer, and she looped her arm through his. He freed his arm and draped it over her shoulder.
"You gonna introduce us, Emily?"
Of course, sorry. She took a deep breath to calm her racing heart. "Wade, this is Ranger Austin Crowley." Wade held out a hand to shake Austin's.
"Sergeant Bruner, but you can call me Wade."
He raised an eyebrow.
"Are you two seeing each other?"
She elbowed Austin to keep him from answering. "That is not your business." She straightened her spine and lifted her chin. "So you're a state cop?" Emily asked.
"I'm one of the detectives assigned to this case."
"One of?" Austin asked.
"Sergeant Strauss will be working with me."
Emily cleared her throat. "Why don't we take you to the skull?" Austin took a step backward.
"I'll hang here."
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.